Okay.
On with the meeting.
On with the meeting. So what we're gonna do is...
Thank you, Dan, I gotta go, Vince.
All right, nice to see you.
Glad I could vote.
Me too.
I go for...
I wasn't kidding about you being chair, you know, that was real.
You know that I will do whatever is needed.
See you.
Okay, so... Looks like more people are there. So what I imagined us doing here now is we're gonna see if we can measure the difference between the middle box there and the bottom box over there. And we'll display it on the screen. We were having a heck of a time earlier with the one set of software, and we've got another set of software at a different person, and we'll see how measuring subs is. And if anybody has any thoughts about measuring how to do it and get some valid data in this space. We tried it earlier on the ground, and we got pretty much nothing, so we're trying it up above and see what happens. Okay, so are we ready? Are our two systems ready here? I should get the Omni configuration going. Yes. 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 So I need to get this out of the way and change this one to bypass its processing. Hold on just a second here. So Daniel, do you want to provide the source?
Bob's going to run it off his system. He should run his source.
He wasn't running his source. He was using my source. So hold on just a second. I got to change something here.
Okay.
I have control of the mixer. Okay. So I'm going to come out of number 5, which is the upper one. Okay, so I'm bringing it up. You tell me what level you want. And then hold on, I'm going to take it out of here. So it's coming. It's not out of the sub because I didn't send it to the sub yet. Nope. Let me do this first. So we are adding there and there. Okay. Okay, good. So what you're looking at now is Bob's computer, and the blue trace is this front mic, and that's the one we're paying attention to. The red trace is a different mic. And he's controlling the, yeah. Do we want to switch over to your computer, Daniel?
You can if you want to.
Does this reach your plug?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, just scooch it over.
There we go. You had a little more, but you had a kink in the cable.
Okay, we can see it.
Okay, so that's the impulse response.
And you can see it from behind the screen, but it's backwards. So all we care about now is the impulse response.
Right, and I'd like to make a comment about this if I could. Is there a mic up here?
Yeah. Squeak, oops, squeak.
Okay, so what's happened here is we've run peak noise through the system. I've done an impulse response of this stacked array that Dan has over here. And you're seeing that on the screen. And I'm going to change
the way... That's the middle box only.
I'm going to change the way that this looks a little bit here so that you can see what's happening before and after. Let's see if I can move my cursor around. Okay, so here you can see there's some initial energy that's happening, and then you've got the main peak of the energy that's here, and it's fairly broad. You'll also notice up in this area that there's just quite a bit of garbage going on up here. I would imagine that a lot of this is either some kind of low-frequency noise and or reflections or a combination of the both. The thing that I've noticed a lot of times trying to measure impulse response on low frequencies is that it can be really hard to get a good, clean impulse response, especially in an environment like this. So I want to mention a technique that Topper Soden taught me that he said he got from Dick Heiser, which is basically never trust what you see on the screen as being correct if you only do the measurement once. The idea is that every time you shoot this thing again and again and again, you're going to get something a little bit different. But over time, you should see a certain number of repeats of delay time that are going to keep popping up. So what Dick and Topper used to do would be they would just take this measurement like 100 times and write down every single result. And then they would look for the number that came that kept popping up more commonly than any other number. And they would take that as being the actual delay time.
So our mic is about 10 feet from the speaker. Why are we seeing the peak response out at 30 or 28?
That's probably another good Ryan and Mark question. My feeling is that we're seeing a combination of delay through the electronics as well as the physical delay of the distance of the speakers to the microphone. And when Topper and I were talking about this, what he said to me was that subs take a long time to develop, a lot longer than you might think. And his feeling was that even if you had the subwoofers out in front of the arrays, most people would logically think that they have to delay the subs back to the array, but in fact, he didn't believe that to be true. And I found in practice personally that I agree with Topper that often is not the case, that even with the subs out in front of the main arrays, you sometimes still have to delay the arrays because the sound coming from them can come to you so much later than the sound on the that you're getting out of the subs. You want to comment on that, Ryan?
Well,
we need another microphone here.
There should be mics out there rolling around, isn't there?
No, it got put away. Lindsay will grab it. While you're getting that, I attended a couple of SIM classes that Bob McCarthy put on, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but my recollection is that he said as long as you're within about 400 milliseconds, the subs to the mains, it's going to be, the sub frequencies are so long.
Is there a high pass filter?
You need to turn the switch on there.
Did you turn the mic back on?
Oh, maybe I didn't.
No, it's just muted.
Yep, that was
me. Is there a high pass filter on the box?
There is not a high-pass filter. I put a low-pass filter, but there's not. There may be something going on.
There's probably a high-pass filter inside of it, so that's where all the delay is going to be coming from, depending on how they have it configured.
Hmm. Okay.
High-pass filter causes delay.
Uh-huh.
USB itself causes delay.
Right.
The delay caused by the high-pass filter can be massive.
Yeah, the delay caused by the by the electronics on this side of it is
probably
in the... Yeah, it's pretty short.
The delay caused by
high pass.
The DSP's electronics is probably, because I think that's got 48 kilohertz DSP, and it's probably 2 milliseconds, maybe 2.5 internal.
What has a 48K DSP?
That subwoofer. That's a 48 kilohertz sample rate DSP.
Hmm. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Most fire boxes, unless they're brand new, those are 48 kilohertz DSP.
Hmm. Okay.
Less
No, these are old. These are old.
Yep. So there's probably at least 2 milliseconds of turn up, 1 millisecond of repair. High pass filter could be 20. It all depends on what it is.
And this is a digital console?
Yeah.
So we got another delay going through the console?
Yeah, the console, I think, is 4 milliseconds or something.
Oh, and one other thing to mention is...
What's that?
Yeah, and there's one other thing I should mention here that I didn't say before. Having me set this up was a last-minute thing, so I did not do a loop through the whole system here. I'm doing a local loop back, and so I would expect to see that the timing that Smart reports back to me is going to be off somewhat for that reason as well.
Say yeah. Again?
Is your mic up in the air?
It is.
Yeah, it's on this stand here.
Would you humor me and put it on the floor?
Yeah.
Sure. I only put it up in the air because that's where the other mic is that we were going to compare my signal to.
So yeah, I'll do it.
I wanted to measure from the same point in space.
So you're on the black stand.
That's correct.
You'll get rid of a lot of that noise if you just put it.
Yeah, that's how I do it. When I do low frequency measurements, I tend to do ground plane measurements.
Your mic stand is too tall. Yeah.
Lay it over.
Yeah, we'll just lay it over. Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay. Take a picture of that here.
For everyone looking, this is the proper configuration for a microphone for measuring subwoofers sitting on a floor.
Can you give me a little bit more gain?
Well, you can see a couple things here. One of them is that the trace is cleaned up quite a bit because we're not seeing all that reflection. But the other thing that you can see now is that Smart is actually reporting that the polarity is reversed here, which we couldn't see in the other measurement because there was so much garbage going on.
It's
the array or just the bottom component?
The middle component. We're measuring the middle component. Right. Yeah, I've got it normal, so I don't know where the reverse would be.
I've noticed this before, and I'm not really sure where it comes in.
And where are you seeing that?
Oh, on the screen. See where my cursor is here?
Yeah.
You see that the highest peak of energy here is actually
upside down.
Is going downwards instead of upwards.
Yeah.
Because we have 20 hertz content in this box, you really can't tell whether it's in polarity or not. Because if you're looking at the impulse response, the content of the impulse response that's 20 hertz is what's the wavelength of 20 hertz? Very big. That section is the higher frequency, like 100 hertz.
So we're measuring at the point where it's gone through one half cycle?
Probably. You just can't tell. So you've got to remember, an impulse response is full bandwidth.
Right.
So it contains all frequencies.
55 feet,
20 hertz. Okay. So shall we try measuring the bottom box and check the time difference there?
The only way, as a quick guess and check, if anybody's ever seen a little, I think TurboSound makes one, and a couple other people's, the Gold Sound polarity checker. plug it into an impulse in your console, you know, plug it into the impulse in your console, take the receiver over to the front of the speaker box. That's how you tell if it's in polarity.
Well, let's do something else here, too. Since I'm no longer trying to match Bob's microphone position, there's no reason why I can't come all the way out to the lip of the stage and get at least a little bit more distance.
Do you want to measure the same box or a different one?
I would might as well measure the same one, then we can look and see what happens.
Okay.
And if Ryan's correct, then we should see this move.
Okay.
And you're ready to go.
Ready?
We've seen a drop in level now, and we've seen that since the microphone has moved further back, we have a longer delay time, but the basic impulse response still looks the same. So you want to switch over to the back box now?
Okay.
I mean the bottom box.
So you're noting the time? Well, how do we note the time of this?
32.56 milliseconds for the middle box. Anybody out there got something to write that down with?
We'll remember.
We got one right here.
So because we're using the same chain of delayed piled up, the difference should be valid then. Okay?
Yeah. We're looking for relative difference.
Yeah. And then we've also got in this space the back wall, which now we're farther away, so we're probably getting more back wall, but we'll see it maybe.
So we're seeing a more pronounced second bump because of the higher frequency energy reflecting off the back wall coming to the microphone.
Okay.
Let me also do this. So now you can see a little bit more of the energy that's happening before and after Smart finds the peak.
Okay. So what's our number here?
68.38.
Now, that can't be right.
This is one of the shortcomings of the auto finder in Smart. Remember how the other measurement had down, up, down, up, and we used the second down as the peak?
Mm-hmm.
We should use the second down again.
All right.
Because we have to make the assumption that the spectral content coming out of the boxes is the same, and all other things are the same. So the system didn't change. So even though it's having a problem finding it, we have to know that.
I want to jump in on that too, because this is a known problem with this revision of Smart, and I don't know if they ever actually fixed it in any of their other revisions. But Smart has a really hard time sometimes knowing where to put the autolocator, and so I often have to go in and move it around manually myself. Otherwise, the phase information that you get on the transfer function screen is basically meaningless. It doesn't?
Good. Doesn't use what?
The new version peak? Of Smart doesn't use a peak detector to try and find the delay.
Okay.
It has some other algorithm. I talked to them about it.
Does it work now?
I don't know. I don't own it, but I was just asking about it.
A couple of people have talked to say it works a whole lot better than it did.
Good.
And I would place it this way. I would say I think it works as best as an ASIO driver computer measurement system can work.
Right. I understand. Yeah, and if you look at where my cursor is now that I'm moving across, you can see that when I get to the peak of what it did find right here, then I move over to this first peak of energy here, level-wise, they're not all that different from each other. And if we look at the troughs...
What's the difference between those two peaks? The top peaks. That one, and the one in front of it.
Difficult for me to tell.
Time difference or amplitude?
Time difference, ballpark it.
Yeah.
Oh, time difference, that's easy. So this one over here, this peak is coming in at 41.88, and the one that the autolocator found is coming in at 68.38.
So like roughly 20 milliseconds. How far is that speaker from the back wall?
Roughly 20 feet.
So that peak that your cursor is on is the incident energy from the box. The peak that it auto-detected is the reflected energy from the wall.
What now?
No.
Yeah.
But what we
so we have very little absorption in here. Yes. So in our distances for low frequency energy are pretty small. So our attenuation from distance is very small. Plus we're in an enclosed space, so we're not losing very much.
But I agree with Lars. If it's 20 feet to the wall, then it's 20 feet back. So we should be seeing more of the 20
milliseconds. Is it 20 feet to the wall?
Yeah.
Let's find out.
Roughly. I'd say it's within 10. No, it's way more than 10. But we want to measure that second down peak to find out.
Actually, it is not 20 feet to the wall. It's considerably shorter than that.
So what is it?
Well, it depends on whether or not you trust my shoe size. But I would guess it's probably somewhere...
How many
somewhere
feet are they?
Actually, feet. Actual feet.
Actual feet, yeah. But I counted 11 of my feet sizes.
So it's 10 feet.
There's no way.
Maybe 13 at most.
My feet are exactly a foot.
That's very handy.
You're stepping out.
Okay, it's 12, but I'm stepping out a little bit because I'm compensating for the fact that my feet are not 12 inches long.
How many milliseconds was it, Daniel?
My feet are exactly a foot long.
27.
16.
So I think you're right. I think we're seeing the back wall reflection.
Reflected energy off the wall.
My feet are exactly 12 inches, and they are 16 plus a little bit. So it's 16 1/4 feet. From speaker to wall.
Nobody has a tape measure.
We do in the back room here somewhere.
Well, it's 27 milliseconds. Divide by 2.
13.
This is 13. So let's figure out how many feet that is. We're pretty close.
Yeah, I think we're getting
close. We're within an eighth of a wavelength. That's what it is.
Okay. So the point of this is to measure the difference between the front facing box and the rear facing box. So we want to go to that second down peak. Right, to know what the difference, what the time is. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so Daniel, can you tell us what that second down peak,
the second
time is?
The second down peak
is not that
one.
No,
not that one. The one before,
the one before it.
Oh, this one right here?
That was the one we used in the first measurement.
Okay.
So we want to know that number.
That's 35.94.
Okay, so Bob, what was the difference?
But that's only off of one measurement taken.
Right.
If we kept taking it over and over again, we'd probably see a bit of variation.
First number again?
32.56.
Which once again, we only took once.
So what's the difference here?
3 milliseconds.
3 point what? I'm not looking at the numbers.
Roughly 3 and change milliseconds?
Yeah.
All is right with the world.
Yeah, so that's our ballpark. Okay, but I want to know what the point is.
Oh, it's 35.94 is the current one, so that's... And then the first one was 32.56.
I can't do that in my head. Could you please subtract one from the other?
It's about 2.5.
2.5. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to dial in 2.5 to the bottom box. 2.5 milliseconds. And I'm going to flip the polarity. Okay, so 2.38. Okay, and I'm going to look and see what the smart or the Meyer calculated one is. If I can get to that screen, it was 2.31. So I would say 2.3, whatever we got, is pretty close to 2.3.
The simulation said 2.31?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Okay. So the next step will be to put some sound through both of these. And we might as well use your pink noise, Daniel, since it's connected in. And here it comes, and you should come up and walk around this to see what's going on here. Let's turn the microphones off.
It would be very interesting to store this impulse response and see if it is more or less noisy. Because the gain is higher. So you should have a lower noise floor relative to the peak.
It's not as massively profound an effect as I had hoped, because I think in part we got so many reflections here, but it's definitely a lot more pounding out here than it is in the back. In an open field, you can hear better. Yeah, you're not hearing the reflections. We're relatively small space here for that, although it's a great space, but for this purpose, it's indicative rather than definitive of what's going on. So Bob wants to hear a few seconds more, and you can see his screen from behind there. Okay, so, okay, so what we're looking at now, the blue trace is this mic that's in front, and the red trace is the mic that's in back, and there's about 10 dB difference between those two. So there's 10 dB of less crap going that way than is coming this way. So that's a bonus. Okay, any other comments about this cardioid one before questions before we move on? Okay, so our next demonstration will be the end fire array, and we'll fire up the back one first so you can hear what it sounds like uniformly, and then I'll add the second one, and I forget what delay I put in there, but I'll tell you. And then we'll do the third one. I'm going to start with the back one just because there's no delay on it. So the time is a little weird, or the space is a little weird. But we'll start with that one, and let me first take a time out here. Okay. So here's the back one. Okay, now here's the back one and the middle one, and there's a 4 millisecond delay between those two. And let's do that. Those two boxes with 4 milliseconds in between them. The perfect measurement for this spread distance is 5.63, and we'll listen at 4, and then we'll listen at 5.63, and you can see if you can tell the difference between those two. No phase action happening here. This is all straight sound going to it, and just delay is the only difference between each box. Okay, so I'm going to unmute this one and check and see that it is in fact 8, and it is. Okay, so here are 3 boxes. It's way more obvious to me that something profound is happening differently. Any comments about that?
Seems to be substantially better.
Bigger difference.
Yeah,
bigger. Bob, what kind of differences were you measuring? Or were you measuring that? You're not in the right spot. Yeah, okay, that's all right. So let me dial in 5.63 on each of these. going to be 5.63 and 11.26.
Is this two or three boxes?
This will be three boxes. Here. Okay, here comes theoretical perfect spacing. Measurement, but still in the dead zone, probably. Again, the blue is the front mic, and the red is the rear. And what's the dB on that, Bob? The left. What's the scale on the left? What does 12 mean? Magnet. Yeah.
Tacos.
Those are tacos. Is that measured in beers? So what are you getting there? What are we seeing? What's the magnet? What the difference in dB difference between those two? What?
Yeah. Well, this is a transfer function, so I think it's tracking. So, let's say it's 14 versus 4. 10 dB difference from the back.
So that's 10 again. Okay.
And then looking across this bottom one, this guy right here, and trying to just mentally average someplace there. So I'm going to call that right here, and then average roughly about 4. 4 and 14 dB. So 10 dB. And they're off axis too.
Right.
And they're not on the ground plane, they're up at your height.
Right. Okay. Any comments? That was the extent of the meeting.
No, it's nice to see a correlation between real stuff and theoretical stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if it's as much of a profound correlation and exact. Well, this is only 10, and I think we were getting something more than that before. But. It's cool to see that something is.
Can you mean it's still significant?
Yeah.
Well, you can hear it. I mean, there's no question you can hear a big difference.
Yeah.
And the difference is just the room.
Yeah, we're hearing lots of reflections in the room. And is that 10 dB the difference between the guitarist telling you to turn down the guitar so you can't hear it anymore out there, but they're happy there? Or whatever.
To put 10 dB in perspective, if you take a 4-box. And fired Corder array into the middle of a field with a 4-meter microphone radius, the best you'll get is 20 dB. That's I mean, ideal reality.
Cool.
Take all the bad things out of the world, and you know, this is the one isolated case of the best thing. That's what you'll get. So
cool.
Yeah.
And when you're doing a band mix, if something's down 3 dB or 5 dB, it's essentially out of the picture. So getting rid of 10.
Absolutely. You get 6 dB of headroom on a live stage, and that's great.
So there's a couple of techniques of how you can do that if you have more than one subwoofer.
So, Dan, if you were to do this Empire method in an actual shell, where would you put the speakers?
So the question is, if you use the Enfire in an actual show, where do you find this much real estate? And that can be the issue. As I said before, they can be closer together than this. It was just easy for me because I can multiply by five to do this. I've put this under a stage before, and it worked surprisingly well. There was not a lot of bleed up, and certainly no more than having the subs off to the side would be, and a lot less as you got farther back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you'll notice is if you start at about a 6 foot spacing and you measure it and you measure the polar response and you collapse it and you collapse it and you collapse it, you'll find that there's an ideal spacing,
right.
And then you'll bring them close together and it'll actually expand back out. And for the 30 to 80 hertz bandwidth that we care about in pro audio, it's about 3 feet. That's like the magic number.
Oh, cool.
It varies a little bit with, and about 4 boxes. So 4 boxes is about the point of diminishing returns,
mm-hmm.
In terms of acoustic output out the front. You add a 5th box, you don't even measure a dB of gain. So when you go from 1 box to 2 and you double the power, you almost get 6 dB, you get like 5.5, maybe 5.25, depending on configuration. You add a 3rd box, you get a couple dB more. You know, you get like 2 more.
The effects seem more significant than that to me, going from 2 to 3
In a room like this, you go from 2 boxes to 3 boxes, and you shouldn't get more than, what, 3 dB?
Well, you can't get more than 3 dB.
Yeah, you
can't. That's physics. You get it. You're getting my point.
Yeah.
So,
but the directionality seemed more profound.
The directionality will get more profound. So
yeah.
What I'm saying is, when we're talking about the SPL and you go on axis in front of the loudspeakers and you go from 1 box to 2 in an Enfire configuration, you get like 5.5, 5.25, you don't get 6. You go from 2 to 3, you get like 2. You go from 3 to 4, you get 1. You go from 4 to 5, you get like 1/4. It goes down. It goes down really fast. What you will get, the more boxes you stack in the back, is you will get more attenuation. So basically, it's how much attenuation in the back does one want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a good rule of thumb, and that's that if you go past a half wavelength, you're not getting any more benefit either. You're actually making the situation worse. So the card Enfire array, you know, call it 4 sources as the point of diminishing returns, and call it a half wavelength of the depth of 4 sources. X spacing is also the point of maximum returns, so you got to balance those 2 things when you do this as well. So, do you have an email live here?
I'm sorry?
Do you have an email live here?
I don't even know.
I could send
is.
You a PDF file that actually has some.
Oh, yeah.
Real world measurement versus simulation.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting. You could take a look at it.
We never hooked up my computer to the internet here, so I'm not sure. TJ?
Yeah.
I only have it on my phone, so I can't get USB.
Can we? Right here. Let's escape. Capital C. Well, all of them are capital. Oh, this computer doesn't have email anyway, so you can't email it to me. Okay, well, never mind. Yeah, it's an operator issue. There are some resources that you can go to on the web to look at this stuff. One of them that I found useful when I was trying to figure out the arrays was soundforums.net, and there is a thread called Show Me Your... open call to show me your pictures of subwoofer arrays or something like that. And it's on page 8 of this morning of the Varsity. And it's by a guy named Philip Graham, and he had people send in pictures of their arrays, and there's all kinds of crazy arrays. Well, they're not crazy, they're built for a purpose, but there were certainly things that I would never think of. And you can see a lot of stuff there, and there's another thread on that where it's Carrie Underwood's subsystem, and they showed some pictures of some kind of weird double side fire thing. Do you know anything about that?
On that one, Carrie Underwood did some interesting stuff with sound image, and then she had another tour with Claire. And on the Claire tour, they actually put the, what's the new name of the big crazy Claire double 18 sub?
I-5?
That's the library cabinet.
Right. But there's a sub that goes along with
I-218. Well, they've got the flown sub, and then they've got a rectangular big refrigerator sub. So what they did is 4 high, 4 deep, facing towards each other.
Yeah.
About a 3 foot spacing.
Yeah.
They flew all the subs above the stage in the center.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple of churches that I've done that in the last 5 years. I've done a couple different churches like that, and they actually said the low end would blur your eyes everywhere. They'd never experienced that. Mm-hmm. That you took 16 double 18s and got them that close together. That's the whole point, is to get them as close together as possible so nothing's fighting anything. And that's the low end that you actually achieve when you do that and you don't put them across the front.
And how are they firing? Are they all in unison?
No.
Yeah.
They're 4 delay sections.
Okay.
And they actually have individual DSP or EQ and phase correction on every row. Because if you lay them all out here, you put a microphone out there, and you measure the frequency response of every box, and you looked at, you performed a minimum phase transform on it, and you looked at the group delays, you'll see the group delays go up and down, and up and down, and up and down, and up and down. What's amazing is those group delay peaks and valleys are very easily correctable with simple parametric EQs that don't really do much to the response, but they do a lot to the phase response, and then when you actually go properly delay them, the output is pretty impressive on how much more you get as opposed to just leaving them as they were. The frequency response is a lot flatter. And so here, I'll let everybody look. I've got one up here.
Turn on my thing here.
This was the optimum case. So we measured all the cases. I mean, we literally measured 5 microphone positions for 5 feet, 4 feet, 4.5, or 4 feet, 3.5 feet, 3. Actually, we went 3-inch increments on all the spacings. We spent an entire day measuring all that stuff, finished about 9 o'clock at night. around?
Yeah, you get nasty stuff going backwards. The reality is, especially with double 18 cabinets, we'll probably never make a rectangular double 18 cabinet ever again. It'll have big knocked off corners in the back specifically for this. We're actually going to design a product specifically for hand-fired carburetor arrays for installation that has no back, but it's cool. So that's why we're just to minimize all of those problems. So, and we'll probably sell it as a system, as an amplifier, a DSP, a rigging frame to hang it, because most of the time the churches were putting it in the ceiling because they build these out of concrete and they don't want to stick stuff under it and they don't want it loud here and they want it all dead here and they want it all out there. So we'll sell it as a one line item complete thing. Yeah, it works. Because what we found is that really there is, everybody tries all these variety of configurations. It really is an optimization problem. But there really is, for a given configuration, there's one best answer. For a different configuration, there really is one best answer. We're seeing that more and more and more in Pro Audio. In the last 5 years, everybody's sync 15 and horn stage monitor pretty much looks the same now. It's really fun to say, oh, what black box is that? I can't tell from looking at it. You gotta go read your badge.
Same thing happened in the automotive industry when we started to come with CAD. Yeah. And all the manufacturers came out with the same design. Oh, we can't have that.
Yeah.
10 of our Ford looking like a Chevy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, and it's gonna be really interesting to see the similarities in Pro Audio over the next 10 years come up. For a given coverage pattern, for a given desired SPL response, et cetera, there's one answer. There's not five right answers, there's one answer.
It's pretty optimistic to expect an average schmo to take all of those boxes and assemble them in the afternoon.
It's so complicated, exactly. And so that's why we're talking about, for these amplifier carburetor arrays from a systems approach, what we found is single 18s work better than double 18s every time. Every time. Because the box is too big on a double 18 cabinet. So what everybody's doing is you see the double 18 cabinets, and they're going double wide, and they're going all that deep. No, single 18 cabinet. So we're going to design a multi-dimensional carburetor that says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then it's going to go this way, the same way, and be able to, because DSP is not enough to actually physically take the base. It's big. And when you try to use just DSP to take the base, there's no way to completely have the single, if you listen to the single box response, you know, get it 10 dB louder, get it quieter behind it, and maintain that same sonic character. It's always a trade-off. There's no free lunch. So what we found is that you have to actually use boxes in combination with lots of DSP and measurement to be able to do that. So, yeah.
Pyramid effect.
Literally backwards. So, yeah, the back of your point in both dimensions. Yeah. So, yeah, 3D array of workers in the air.
Well, when you guys get to the point of releasing that, if you want to absolutely demonstrate it, yeah.
So, I didn't know this was going on, or I was saying a whole bunch of information.
Oh, wow.
I've done years of
The
subwoofer simulation that we're doing, the difference is also like those directivity plots computer simulation versus measurement, there are algorithms because they're actually taking wave propagation, box geometry, real non-linearities in a loudspeaker. They're actually taking electromagnetic loudspeaker model and generating pressure response. So there's actually a coupling between a domain inside the loudspeaker, an interface port, an electromagnetic speaker, and an acoustic domain outside in every single one of those boxes. What we found is that from going from the infinitesimal source method with directivity patterns to this, there are differences. And there are differences of several dB when the geometry is big, like an amplifier array. If we put the speakers right next to each other, we get the same result. It's when they're 5-6 feet apart and they've got big boxes. So especially when we go 3 or 4 high and then we go 4 deep, now the boxes are very, very they're really affecting each other. I wish I had it with me, but I have a box, I have an overlay of a 4 meter microphone position of box 1, box 2, box 3, box 4, and their frequency response, and the attenuation caused by the stuff that's in front of it. And it all affects the high end. So all just kind of going down from 0 to 4. There's about a 60 drop because of doubling a distance. So, but that is only valid like 40 hertz and down. It's not valid at 100 hertz. So the boxes in front really messed up 100 hertz. So now we have totally different frequency responses, and we're trying to make them work. So what we're doing is we're correcting the frequency and phase responses and then delaying them due to their geometric location. So that takes a couple hours to like walk through the process from step one to step n. Really requires an outdoor environment because we need to take 100 millisecond long swoops to be able to look at 40 hertz. We can't look at it with an FFT because we're really trying to look at the time domain data to see the difference between the boxes. And, yeah.
How many ways are your systems? Is it five, four way, five way?
Depends. A lot of systems we do in big systems are five, where we build a box called a quad 21. 421, we use it as an infrasound, we use it as an effect. Electronic music business wants it because one box has a true flat response to 25 hertz. You put two boxes, it goes to 23, you put four boxes, it goes to 20. So, what I've actually experienced is giving somebody a flat response to 20 hertz, like it is really laser beam flat and it rolls off, and they walk in and they think it sounds terrible. And you put a high pass filter on it, make it sound like a double A camera. Yeah, they're like, you didn't want a flat response. You didn't want a flat response.
I asked that question because if the high end of the sub range is becoming messed up and you need to lower it down, are you then having to either add a layer in the next wave?
Double 15 line right now. Mm-hmm. Double 18 cabin on the floor. Quad 21 cabin here. This has a high pass filter at like 25. That has a high pass filter at 25 to 30. Those two are good. That has a high pass filter at 45 to 50. They're within a half octave of each other, right? They have different high pass filters. This is that root delay problem. Delay don't fix it. It takes a high pass filter on that to align the group delays to then be able to use delay to geometrically align them. So that's our next field. We've been working on this for a long time. Everybody wants to know how to delay subs. Well, they don't delay subs. You phase correct them. So, and it's actually, you're not phase correcting the subs. The subs are pretty well behaved. Actually, everybody's subs, other than weird manifold loaded and horn loaded subs, are pretty well behaved on this. So, whether it's a.
Well, that's because they're so simple.
They are simple. Exactly right. Well, they're simple until they get to 135, 140
dB.
Air is nonlinear, and we now have a thermal fluids problem. We no longer have a simulated electric analog model problem. That's the real, you know, that's the real world. Subwoofers can make a garbage bag move 6 feet, you know, with one bass in it. We actually really have that. And that's, yeah, so now we have a compressible fluids problem. That's exactly it. Really, the subs are pretty well paid. A liner is complicated, and it's not complicated. And we need to phase correct it to then make it patch the subs. And so a lot of our DSP centers that we're shipping nowadays have this all pass filter just slipped in at 50 hertz. Then when you listen to the liner by itself, you have no idea. But when you plug the subs in, if I turn the all pass filter on and off, you go, oh my God, that's crazy. And if you walk the field, it's night and day. So the difference with just the all pass filter on and all pass filter off. So. So I've actually spent a lot of time recently measuring some competitors' amplifiers and DSPs to see what they're doing. See if because you can plug your amplifier in a DSP. This is where we found it. We were going, oh man, the group delays are massive. Because we were measuring a late DSP, and we were measuring an LM26, and I grew up in a $3,000 dealer DSP, and saw these huge group delay differences. And I'm like, okay, well, let's go measure some other DSPs. It exists at all, and it's a math problem. They're doing what they're supposed to do. This, you change the filter, you know, from 30 hertz to 50 hertz, and the group delay just shifts correspondingly. So we've got to shift the group delay, and that doesn't happen with one delay. So, yeah. So we found that nobody else is doing this. So we actually found some DSP amplifiers with no high pass filters for subs. And that's probably the
not enough.
But subwoofer deployment like this has been a major field of measurement and head scratching, and, because there's so many people that think there's so many different ways to do it, and there actually is a whole bunch of ways to do it. There's only a few to do it really right. So, like the no free lunch thing, you got to weigh the pros and cons. There really is.
Just true the law on yes. There's always a free lunch. Perfect and one parameter is screwed up.
Multiple ways. Until someone can make a full manual loudspeaker of infinite output, multi-way systems are always a comprehensive. So really our job is minimizing as far as possible. So,
all right, well, thank you. I think we're at the end of our time here. We need to get out of TJ's here. Thanks for coming. Great to see you. Great to see you.
You too. And I wanted to just mention that currently today is the anniversary of the birth.
Is that right?
Really?
Okay.
They announced that on KXC.
Wow.
And
does someone mix stereo when you're going to give it a mixer?
if you're going to mix more, there's no need for steroid. I am there.
All right.
Because number one also, it